Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jim Farrick and I represent Altel Communications. We are here due to the district court's denial of Altel's motion to compel arbitration. This case is actually very straightforward. In a nutshell, Mr. Gore entered into a contract with First Cellular for mobile phone services. Subsequently, after First Cellular was acquired by Altel, Mr. Gore entered into a second contract with Altel for mobile phone services. That contract contained an arbitration provision. The arbitration provision in the Altel agreement contained language substantially identical to the provisions which this court has held should be interpreted very broadly and are capable of expansive reach. Specifically, it stated, any dispute arising out of this agreement or relating to the services and equipment must be settled by arbitration.
This counsel, is the dispute under the Altel agreement or is it under the First Cellular agreement?
The dispute is, if you look at the plaintiff's complaint, it is obvious that it is under the Altel agreement and I guess the First Cellular agreement, but clearly it relates, if you look at the allegations of the complaint, and I'm going to walk through a few of them, it clearly relates to the Altel services agreement.
Okay, so that's your position, that both service agreements come into question.
Correct, and Altel is in fact named as a party defendant in its capacity as a contracting party with the plaintiff. And in fact, that's my next point, is that he asserts claims directly against Altel that arise out of an alleged conspiracy between Altel and First Cellular. So the fundamental issue here is whether the arbitration provision in the Altel services contract, which Mr. Gore acknowledges in his complaint that he entered into, encompasses the factual allegations in his complaint. The issue of scope is one that must be decided as a matter of law and thus is proper on a de novo review for this court to decide. Given the obvious presumption in favor of arbitration and this court's broad construction of arbitration provisions, it is clear that Mr. Gore's claims fall within the purview of the Altel services contract. Below, the district court mischaracterized this question of scope as a fact question regarding whether Mr. Gore actually entered into the contract with Altel. Looking at page 10 of the district court's order, it's clear that while the district court erroneously concluded that there was a question as to contract formation, in its discussion analysis of the plaintiff's claims, it's clear that the issue is one of scope, and the district court actually started to identify it properly in that paragraph on page 10 and then came up with the wrong conclusion. Contrary to what the district court found, there is actually no question as to whether or not the parties entered into this Altel services contract. Throughout his complaint, Mr. Gore avers that he entered into this Altel agreement. For example, if you look at paragraph 46, it states, Gore also entered into a new service contract with Altel on terms that were less favorable than his prior agreement with First Cellular. So you have an admission right in the heart of the complaint that he entered into this agreement. Under the applicable standard, which is the same as summary judgment proceedings under Rule 56E, the plaintiff bears the burden to dispute this. Contrary to the position he has taken in his appellate briefs, Mr. Gore has not come forward with any material fact to challenge this, only argument. If you look at his affidavit that was submitted in opposition to the motion to compel arbitration, which is document 16 of the district court's pleadings, I think it's exhibit 2 to that exhibit, to that document, he in no way challenges his own statement in his complaint that he entered into the Altel services contract. Quite simply, there was no basis for the district court's conclusion that there was a question about it. Indeed, if you look at Mr. Gore's brief, including his jurisdictional statement here, it's clear that the issue of scope is at the heart of this case. When looking at scope, the obvious starting point is that it's beyond black-letter law that arbitration is favored by the federal policy underpinning the Federal Arbitration Act. As espoused by the Supreme Court in Concepcion and Moses Cone and numerous other cases, the FAA reflects a federal policy, a liberal federal policy favoring arbitration. There's a heavy presumption of arbitrability, and any doubts concerning the scope of arbitrable issues must be resolved in favor of arbitration. Again, let's look at the language of this agreement. Any dispute arising out of this agreement or relating to the services and equipment must be settled by arbitration. This court has repeatedly held that this similar language, the arise out of and relating to language, are extremely broad and capable of expansive reach. In the Sweet Dreams Unlimited versus Dial Mattress case, this court held that similar language, the arise out of language, can be applied and require arbitration when the dispute is in any way connected to the party's contract. That's obviously a very broad standard. If you look at the plaintiff's complaint, the core or the essence of his complaint is a civil conspiracy between Altel and First Cellular that drove him from the First Cellular contract and forced him into the Altel services contract. As pled, the existence of his claims are predicated on the Altel services contract. Paragraph 33, looking specifically at what the plaintiff has said, Altel acted deceptively while making improper threats and effectuating the transition in an effort to coerce the First Cellular subscribers to enter into less favorable contracts. Paragraph 53, defendant Altel's conduct forms a significant basis for the claims asserted by the proposed plaintiff's class. Paragraph 161, in pertinent part, says, as set forth, defendant Altel has reaped substantial profit and revenue from the class slash subclass members from the additional sales of new or replacement handsets and or other equipment and for more expensive service plans. There in paragraph 161, you have a tie to both the Altel services contract and the equipment being provided thereunder. The complaint alleges independent acts of wrongdoing by Altel. It is impossible to separate the claims he asserts from those. The claims are inextricably intertwined, the claims asserted against Altel. They arise out of the Altel services contract. In order to undertake an analysis and adjudicate the plaintiff's complaint, it necessarily requires you to look at the Altel services contract itself. Plaintiff indeed calculates some of his damages as a direct comparison of the Altel services contract to the First Cellular contract. It is clear that plaintiff intentionally interwove the allegations against Altel into his complaint. And now that he has done so, he is bound by that choice. And it is clear that the scope of the arbitration provisions encompass the plaintiff's claim, particularly when you look at the standards favoring arbitration and this court's broad application of identical language. The plaintiff here has argued that the Altel contract is unconscionable. However, if you look at the plaintiff's attacks on the contract, they are attacks on the contract as a whole, and thus they are for the arbitrator to decide. There is no unique attack on the arbitration provision that would give this court jurisdiction to decide it. As this court held in Janiga versus Q-Star Capital and also in the Supreme Court's case of Prima Paint, where a question exists as to whether a contract containing an arbitration clause is unenforceable in its entirety due to procedural unconscionability, that's a question for the arbitrator. And that is true regardless of the basis, whether it's overreaching, unconscionability, fraud in the inducement, or lack of consideration. So here, any attacks that the plaintiff brings, as set forth in his brief, should be decided by the arbitrator. Unless the court has any questions, I would simply ask that this case be ordered to arbitration and that it be the district court's holding be reversed and remanded and the case be stayed pending the outcome of that arbitration. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Helms?
Good morning. David Helms on behalf of Plaintiff Appellee Christopher Gore. May it please the court. The FAA was intended to recognize that arbitration is a creature of contract. It was intended to put arbitration agreements on equal footing with other contracts and counter prior judicial hostility to arbitration agreements. And the courts have recognized that it was not intended to elevate arbitration agreements above other contracts, particularly with regard to contract formation. There is no presumption that parties did enter into an agreement to arbitrate. And here, Alltel is sidestepping some fundamental requirements for contract formation, such as mutual assent and consideration, given the evidence that they put forth in the court below. What we see here is not arbitration by agreement, where the parties truly intended to enter into an arbitration agreement, but arbitration by ambush. And the case law doesn't support compelling arbitration under these circumstances.
Are you suggesting that Mr. Gore was forced into entering into the Alltel contract?
Well, we use this term Alltel agreement, and so I want to be clear about that. There is no evidence of the actual Alltel agreement that my client entered into. What we have presented here by Alltel was various invoices for services rendered pursuant to the First Cellular agreement, and then contending that those make up part of any subsequent agreement with Alltel. Truly, there was a relationship developed with Alltel, independent of First Cellular, but the evidence of the full contract, that full agreement, has not been presented and was not presented to the district court. And that's why the district court wanted to have a Section 4 trial. The district court didn't know when any such purported agreement was entered into, under what circumstances, and that's a critical issue here. And, in fact, that brings up this threshold jurisdictional issue. Clearly, the court has jurisdiction to address an order denying a motion to compel arbitration, even if it's without prejudice. However, the prior precedents in this court, Janiga, Kowaleski, Boomer, in each of those cases, the Section 4 trial was not needed. So the issue here is what happens if Alltel now has not just addressed the issue of whether or not the district court properly allowed other discovery to proceed. And truly, I believe that's why there's a bit of gun jumping here prior to the Section 4 trial. I'm not casting aspersions at counsel for having elected to do so. I understand. I agreed to limit discovery at the trial court below. The problem, however, is that they expanded their appeal to address the existence of the arbitration agreement and the scope of it as a whole. And that creates a policy problem that wasn't confronted in any of those prior decisions. And that is this. What happens if this court correctly concludes that Alltel did not establish the existence of an arbitration agreement as a matter of law? We go back down. Do we now have a Section 4 trial? And then the district court again denies the motion to compel arbitration, and we come right back up here. That was not something that I believe the FAA intended in allowing for interlocutory appeals. I think the only remedy for that is, because Alltel has chosen to broaden the scope of its appeal to address all of these issues, it has essentially said, we're all in, and if they haven't established the existence of an agreement as a matter of law, then they waive the right to a Section 4 trial below on that point.
Well, how would you distinguish the comments made by counsel for Alltel, where he cites a number of rhetorical paragraphs in your complaint that seem to acknowledge that, in fact, Mr. Gore was, at least in part, operating under an agreement with Alltel?
Again, that addresses the issue of did he enter into an agreement with Alltel is very different from whether or not he entered into an agreement to arbitrate these claims with Alltel. Did he enter into an agreement to arbitrate at all? That is not established by the record. And it's Alltel's burden to prove the existence of a contract. It, in presenting this evidence to the district court, needs to not just present a piece of paper. It needs to establish the elements required to establish a contract. And it didn't do that.
Do you acknowledge that Mr. Gore entered into a contract with Alltel?
There is a contractual relationship between my client and Alltel currently.
And if that's the case, then why isn't he bound by the service agreement?
Well, because it isn't clear that that the terms and conditions of any agreement that was entered into during the pendency of the First Cellular contract applied. And if you look, and I'll get to this in a moment, regarding the construction of the terms, if you review the terms of the Alltel agreement, you see that all of them are very agreement-centric. If you go through, you see that it talks about terms arising under this agreement or relating to the services and equipment. But services and equipment are both defined terms. Services relate to services you have asked us to provide through this agreement. And then agreement is defined. And if you go to agreement, you see that an agreement is the terms and conditions and the service order. There is no service order introduced in evidence here. We've never seen a service order. And that service order, the court should not just presume that the service order is in accord with their client contentions here. My client doesn't have a service order, and we weren't allowed to proceed with any discovery whatsoever to address that issue. In addition, not knowing the term of the agreement is relevant because, again, it's services provided, you have asked us to provide through this agreement, and it's equipment that was purchased from Altel or used for these services, which are, again, services through the agreement. Now, courts have indicated a reluctance to stretch an arbitration clause in one agreement to apply to a dispute arising under another agreement, even when that the arbitration clause was fairly broad. But the cases have recognized that, including Sweet Dreams Unlimited, what we're looking for is, do they find their origin or genesis in the contract? Now, certainly, with regard to the breach of contract claim, that is not the case. With regard to the other claims, there is a connection, because certainly that was what motivated Altel to breach the first cellular agreement. It was a motivating factor, yes, undoubtedly, and that's why you see allegations of it in the complaint. But that does not mean that there was a conscious agreement to arbitrate disputes arising out of the first cellular agreement. And when we're on this scope issue, other cases such as Security Watch, which was a case involving a series of seven contracts where only the seventh agreement contained an arbitration clause, and it had similar, in fact, somewhat broader language than the arbitration clause at issue here, the court found that anything relating to any of the services provided under the first six agreements were not arbitrable. Only claims arising from the seventh agreement were arbitrable. You see that same logic in a case we cited, AltaCorp, where there was an insurance policy and a premium payment agreement, and the court recognized that even though you did have to refer to the premium payment agreement for certain procedures regarding the matter, the substantive rights and obligations that were in issue arose from the insurance policy, which did not contain an arbitration agreement. That's why this is just a bridge too far, and why much of the case law that they cite is, again, as a prior counsel argued, a round peg in a square hole, I guess. but it's not really applicable because you've got this further attenuation. And the courts have also recognized that when you have a later agreement, you don't as easily infer an intention to embrace disputes arising from the prior agreement because the parties very easily could have expressed such an intention. First Cellular, Altel certainly knew First Cellular contracts were existing at the time. It didn't say arising under this agreement or the First Cellular agreement, and it would have been very easy to have done so. But going back to the contract formation, evidence of an agreement to arbitrate here is simply fine print, pages 9 and 10 of a phone bill mailed during the pendency of the First Cellular agreement for services covered by the First Cellular agreement and charges already incurred under the First Cellular agreement. In addition, as I mentioned previously, we only have a fragment of the agreement as it's defined in the terms and conditions that were presented, and no idea what the service order actually said or what the purported term of the Altel agreement was.
Before you go on to your next point, I want to discuss this discovery, because you indicated that initially you had agreed to limited discovery, but now you want us to affirm, you know, where are you on it? There's a broad discovery order in place now, more broad than, say, Section 4 of the FAA normally anticipate.
Agreed, and I had agreed, as the record reflects below, to limit discovery to the issue of the arbitrability, and that's the discovery that I'm referring to. You know, we don't even have the service order that the terms and conditions reference in this case.
So you're agreeing to limit discovery?
Absolutely, and I agreed
to the
district court.
The scope of the trial would be to the making of the arbitration agreement.
That is correct. It would be a Section 4 trial, yes. But here you've got circumstances where you also don't have mutual assent. The bill was on auto pay. It was because it was for included services that were already incurred. My client, even if he made a conscious choice and it wasn't on auto pay, had to pay it. Cases like Boomer don't apply here, a case cited by Altel, because here not only is there no evidence of mutual assent, but both parties had a pre-existing contractual obligation to continue providing the services that were being provided. Altel, unlike AT&T and Boomer, couldn't stop providing the services, and my client, unlike the plaintiff in Boomer, couldn't stop paying for the services. We were both in a binding contract that we had negotiated back in 2005. And where you have no opportunity to reject, and there's a pre-existing contractual obligation, the case law establishes that does not evidence the creation of a new agreement. The same reasoning dovetails into the unconscionability argument, which is really the other side of the same coin as the contract argument. Because, again, it is founded on the fact that it's fine print at the end of the bill. There was no notice. There's nothing at all in those terms and conditions. And there are a lot of them squeezed onto two small pages. There is nothing in there that references any prior agreement. Even the integration clause doesn't reference prior agreements. It just talks about superseding prior promises or statements by agents or employees.
What was the termination of the prior agreement? Did it have a termination date?
Yes, October 2007. And it is that time period and that time period alone that these claims are based upon. That is it. The fact that Altel, that we are not challenging the validity of any agreement with Altel after that. We are not saying that after October 2007 we were forced to pay more than we should have. What we're saying is we entered into a contract with First Cellular. Altel took that contract as an assignee and assumed all rights and obligations, but no greater rights and no greater obligations than First Cellular owed to my client. And several cases also have recognized that this would be unconscionable under essentially the same doctrines of assent, failure of assent, no consideration. And the Illinois Supreme Court in Razor controls here. Now, they've made reference to this circuit's decisions in Hill v. Gateway and Pro-CD. Those cases are clearly distinguishable because there was no opportunity to reject here, and if he had stopped paying, there would have been a penalty. In fact, Altel most decidedly threatened my client that they would charge him a termination fee under the First Cellular agreement, because the termination fees were actually different. They threatened to enforce a termination fee under the First Cellular agreement if he didn't continue to pay. That's not like Hill, Gateway, or Pro-CD, where it's a form contract that the consumer has an opportunity to reject. Furthermore, to the extent there's any conflict, Razor actually would control because unconscionability is a principle of state law, and it was issued by the state's, Illinois state's highest court.
Counsel, your time has expired. Thank you. Mr. Ferrick. How much time? You have 5 minutes, Mr. Ferrick.
Just briefly, on these questions of fact, there is no question of fact. The plaintiff cannot get around the fact, as pled in his complaint, that he entered into the Altel services contract. Anything else that he wants to argue about is a question for the arbitrator. And that's clearly the holding of this court and the Supreme Court, that any of these issues that he raises as to the attacks on the contract are for an arbitrator to decide. With respect to the issues of the arbitration clause, he does not raise any unique attack on the arbitration provision. He says he didn't get part of it, maybe. These are issues that under the controlling law must be decided by the arbitrator. He does not dispute under the summary judgment standard that this court applies. We presented the affidavit of Mr. Scotty McDonald that says he got these terms and conditions. It's clear he never contests that. For the first time here today, we hear a little bit of a new nuance on whether or not he got it. These are all issues that are not for this court, quite frankly. So unless the court has any other questions, I think the record speaks for itself that he did, in fact, by his own admission, enter into this contract. And any question to the contrary should be left for the arbitrator.
Thank you, Mr. Eric. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.